All right, man, here we go. Another question from the community.
Straight in, yes.
This is from Nathaniel W., who wrote in, says, "Hey guys, I have a question that I hope you haven't covered in another podcast, but I'm working my way through on my daily commute." So, hey, you know, very cool, Nathaniel. By the way, I don't think we've hit this question before. A lot of movements have standards, like box height, a wall ball target height, hand placement on wall walks, that are based on gender and not on athlete height, like they are in other movements, like a handstand push-up, burpees to a target, for example. This year in the Open, wall walks had hand placement specified for guys and girls. As a 6'2" athlete, I was fine with the line. However, some of the shorter guys were having to place their hands far in front of their heads at the start of each movement, more like a Superman than a plank. When I'm coaching, I assume you're coaching classes, when I'm coaching, my goal is to hit the points of performance, like having an athlete use a box height that starts them at an end range of motion, hip crease below the knee on a box step over, but shorter guys and taller girls gravitate towards, the gender standards that aren't appropriate for their height. I have a 5'4" guy working a taller box and a taller wall ball target than I do having a 6'1" girl. Is this something we do because we've always done it this way? Is it for simplicity? Is it another reason? And is it something that maybe we should change?
An excellent question. I think we have talked about this maybe in a less direct manner when we talk about, you know, competition versus training. I think this kind of runs in that general theme.
Yeah, I love the question.
Yeah, me too. And I think there's a lot of meat on the bone there. And I'm going to give a glib answer to start, although I don't mean to be glib. My glib answer is that there is no we in this situation. Mm. And what I mean by that is that one of the beauties of CrossFit is that it can be so personalized and so adapted to whatever group that you happen to have in front of you that there are many different expressions of it. Now, it's all couched kind of within the greater CrossFit culture that tends to have certain norms like any culture does. And that ends up being a bit of a shorthand for the way that most people approach things. But that doesn't mean that the buck stops there and that's the only way to do things. And so I think at its heart, I totally agree. It's like, hey, man, just because something has become an adopted shorthand doesn't mean that you shouldn't take a look at it every once in a while and say, hey, is this serving the people that I need it to serve as good as it could be?
That's
yes
the
or
question.
No. Exactly. And so if you kind of dig into that a little bit deeper, you know, and I'm pontificating a little bit here, you know, you think about how things become norms. Well, a lot of times it's because it's A, been done in the past that way, or B, it sets some sort of ease of execution in motion. And I think that's what you see for a lot of these standards. You know, it's a lot easier to say, okay, we have a standard that's general, and it's just there because that is something that doesn't take a lot of time for us to set up every single time we want to do wall ball, for example. I don't need to measure every individual. I don't have to come in and adjust the targets every single time. It's just a basic thing that we can just execute and focus our attention on other things. Now, not to say every once in a while, like I said, you know, it's a bad idea to stop and say, all right, I've got this Amazon of a woman who's approaching 7 feet tall. I know I'm exaggerating, but, and I've got this very small man. Is it appropriate for them to be using these 10-foot and 9-foot targets that are just kind of standard? Well, yeah, let's take a look. But I guess anyway, the point I'm trying to make is like, yes, absolutely. You should feel empowered to make those changes when you see that they are appropriate for the people you're working with. But understand that there is a utility to a shorthand that exists so that you don't always have to be playing a guessing game or a game of inches. Because at the end of the day, the strike zone for a lot of these things is pretty wide. And the difference between 10'7", for example, is probably insignificant at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I would say the question in general, first of all, it's a big yes. Like you are the captain of your ship. You are authorized to make the best decisions for yourself and your community, period, end of story. So there's the easy answer there. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about standards, you know, 10-foot wall ball target, 9-foot wall ball target, wall walk, you know, whatever it happens to be, standards such as the one that Nathaniel are mentioning, there's probably more categories, but I feel like mm-hmm. the ones you mentioned can fall just into two categories. There's ones that have to have been established due to the confines of competition. To the best of someone's ability to try to make things as fair and as objective as possible, given whatever confines they're working in. But that's not the 5 p.m. class at your facility. That's a totally different world. And so then a lot of the other things, the 24-inch box for men, usually for box jumps, the 20-inch box for women, whatever it happens to be, those are, I would just say, pretty solid recommendations for mm-hmm. most people under most circumstances, most of the time. But that doesn't mean that they should be taken as absolute law and gospel. But if you need a really good place to start that's going to serve a really big swath of the population the majority of the time, I think they're going to serve you pretty well in that regard. But you can always come up with a, you know, like the example you just gave of the two athletes, astonishing height differences. You know, the woman's 2 feet taller than the guy. You know, why is the guy throwing it to the 10-foot target? And she's got that doesn't make any sense. Like you can create, you know, an example that I'm like, absolutely, yeah, let's change something up. It sounds like we could make a better decision in that scenario. And I will say, if this helps out, you know, Nathaniel at all, you know, when I like, let's say I'm going to take a general workout that is steeped in old-timey CrossFit tradition. It's been around forever. I didn't create it. So it has a standard for whatever the movement happens to be that's been around forever. And I'm going to walk into my garage and execute that workout today. I don't feel the need to be so rigid with that. When I walk out into my garage, I have the thought processes in my head about what is the purpose of the workout. Where am I today? You know, is how where I am in my fitness journey, my capabilities, my limitations, my whatever, then contrasted with whatever the written workout is. Do those align beautifully? If they do, fantastic. If they don't in any way, shape, or form, something is too much, too little, too whatever. I don't put a lot of stock into, and this is not meant to be glib. Maybe a better way I can say that is when I walk out into my garage, I don't care how something has been done in CrossFit for years. Mm. I don't care.
Sure.
I don't care what took place in the Open. I don't care what took place at the Games. None of those things are even a blip on my radar. I think about today I'm doing deads, today I'm doing box jumps, today I'm doing wall ball shots, and what makes sense for me. And given one of his answers or one of his questions, I'm not the world's tallest guy. I'm 5'8". When I do box step-ups in my garage, I do not use a 24-inch box, even though if generally speaking, if you were to prescribe that for a large percentage of the male population, it would probably be given with that. But it's just too darn tall for me. A 20-inch box for my box step-ups, dumbbell box step-ups, is perfect. When my upper leg is on that box, my hip crease is just below the top of my knee, but not astonishingly so. And when I use a taller box, like a 24-inch box, I can do a box step up on there. But what I've learned the hard way is, since it is just a bit too darn high, instead of what I think the intent and purpose of the box step up should be to help develop that single leg, you know, driving through the heel, you know, like a one-legged squat sort of a movement, so to speak, for that upper leg. Well, since it's so darn high, what I kind of wind up doing is really extra pushing off with my lower leg on the floor, making it this weird explosive calf raise because I can't quite get up there with my upper leg. Well, that's not the point of the movement, even though the box height might be that. I would much rather use a 20-inch box and really develop some good leg drive and strength on that upper box instead of saying, well, I've got to do it at the prescribed height because that's what the guys are supposed to do. So hopefully that, and I use that kind of general mindset on every movement, every workout, every loading, every everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a big agreement from both of us is you should definitely take a look at what the movement is supposed to be serving and then do your best to try to adapt to that. And, you know, I think if there's a rule of thumb here, it's that playing and catering to the strengths and weaknesses of the individual is always a good idea when you're talking about a group setting. You know, you're always going to have people that are stronger, weaker, more skilled, more experienced, less experienced. And you're going to have to meet them where they are, you know, and sometimes meeting them where they are is, yep, this is going to be a harder movement for you, but we're not going to change it necessarily. It's just something that you're going to have a little bit of a harder time getting through. That's okay. But when it does start to fundamentally change the execution of it, like you're talking about, it's no longer serving the original intent. That's when it's time to look and say, okay, can we make this get closer to what was actually meant by this movement? So I think that's a really important one to highlight. So we talked about this kind of shorthand, or at least I did. I think that's where a lot of things kind of fall. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, unless it's totally left unexamined and we fall into this place where you don't look at it and it's not serving. That's when it's a problem. And then the second thing I would say is replication is something you have to think about if you're going to get too far down the road of tinkering with every movement every time that you do it. So part of the thing that's going to be really important if you're interested in whether or not your program works is the results. Can I track the results and objectively look at them over time and say, yes, I'm moving in the right direction, or no, I'm not? That's increasingly difficult to do if every time you do a movement, there's a certain tweak to the execution of it. So for example, we take your box step up movement, and on day one, you did it at 20 inches. And then a couple weeks later, you did the same workout at 22 inches. And then a couple weeks later, you did the workout again at 25 inches. Mm-hmm. And then you circle back and did it at 21 inches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Very hard to start comparing those efforts to one another on a granular level. And maybe that doesn't matter to you so much, but it can kind of make it tricky to determine whether or not you are actually improving, unless it's something that is really range of motion specific, where perhaps you're working on the range of motion and over that increase of the height, you're starting to see that, like, okay, actually I can handle a greater range. That can be a great indicator. But if there's too much of that tinkering back and forth, it can be difficult to look back and glean anything useful from that. So I just take a look and make sure that you're not getting too far down that road for that reason.
And I would recommend using the notes section on BTWB, you know, under the workout.
Sure.
I do that all the time. If I, for example, there's a workout I'm going to do today that the prescribed final movement is, I think it's 35 push press at 135. That's a no for me, dog. I'm not going to go ahead and I'm just, overhead's not my friend. I'm not going to be
because you're doing it at 185, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Strict press instead of push
press.
Right. That doesn't feel good to me, even though it's the quote unquote prescribed workout. Overhead makes me feel like my neck is just, I'm going to be in a brace the next day because I've done dumb things to myself with motorcycles and other things. So I'm going to press in a different direction today. There are muscle-ups in the workout, so I'm not going to do dips. So I think what I'm going to do at the end is I'll probably get in some bench press, some dumbbell bench press. But whatever pressing I happen to get in, I'll preserve the stimulus, the pressing to the best of my ability. I understand that push press has hip drive and the push press is overhead and the bench press has no hip drive and it's in a different direction. I get it. I'm going to be just fine. Fitness is going to be achieved. And I'm going to write down there in the notes what I did. So the next time this workout comes up, I have that reference as to, oh, right, you know, I did this last time. And that way, like you're saying, it's not a just total dart that I throw at the wall every time. It can't quite remember what it is. You know, I'll also say, as somebody that's been doing CrossFit for a long time, if hopefully it feels other people, if it makes other people feel authorized to do these things, I couldn't tell you the last time I did a wall ball to a 10-foot target. I mean, that just, getting back to my terrible neck, I do them to 9 feet all the time. And I don't know what it is, that difference of 1 foot with regards to the angle I have to crank my neck back to look up at the target. It seems like it shouldn't matter at all. But I've done CrossFit enough that at 10 feet, I'm just moving my head all that afterwards. Mm. Like, oh, that does not feel good. And at 9 feet, I hate wall balls just the normal amount that anybody would hate wall balls. It's not because they're like literally hurting my neck. So I do wall balls at 9 feet. That's what my Karen looks like. That's what my whatever looks like. And it's measurable, observable, and repeatable, because for me, it's always at 9 feet. You know, like I said, if it was at 9 feet one time, 7 feet the next, this then, then it's like, okay, yeah, I'm still getting fit, right? I'm going below parallel. I'm huffing and puffing. Like, there's good stuff happening, but I can't quite tell you how this compares to how I did 6 months ago because it's different every time. So yeah, just kind of keep all that in the back of your head because it's very much true.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I guess those were my two big thoughts, you know, make sure that you do have the license to take a look under the hood, and then make sure that you're doing something that's easily replicable later on down the road so you can compare apples to apples. Or you use that as a progression tool to say, you know, I think the easy example would be like squatting, right? Can't squat below parallel. Slowly over time, I start trying to increase that depth until I am. And then once I'm there, I try to maintain that and there's no further change really. So anyway, those are the big points that I wanted to
hit. Sometimes whether you should or shouldn't change something just because it's written down, right? And has that power as to the prescribed or whatever. I think sometimes if we throw a crazy example to CrossFitters out there, it's suddenly really obvious that one thing might not fit everyone, right? It's like, okay, maybe it's the height. Should I change the box head? I'm not sure. Should I change the wobble height? I'm not sure. But what you're doing, you're having those conversations in your head because you're looking at that athlete, you're assessing where they are, and then you're thinking that, I think I can make a better decision, but I feel this odd compulsion not to do it because of historical precedent that's been set. Whereas if you had a class of 30 people ahead of you and you said, great news, everybody. Today, it's a 10K run. It's going to be fantastic. People will be like, whoa, like that's wildly inappropriate. I can't do that. Oh, what should you do? A 5K is going to be tops for me. Hey, 20 minutes of walking and jogging, that's actually long for where I am. It's like, okay, well, what are we trying to accomplish today with this 10K run that just, you know, knocked everybody back? We're going for just a very long, relatively speaking, lower endurance, unloaded, just conditioning session. And that's 10K for these three people. And it's a 5K for these three people. And it's a 20-minute mixed walking, jogging session relative to where each one of those people are. They're meeting the intended stimulus for the day for where they are with their athletic capability and whatnot. And that same general mindset that leaps out at you, maybe if everyone had to do a 10K, it's the same thing if you're looking at a box height. It's the same thing if you're looking at a wall ball height or a loading on a barbell or whatnot. Like there's some wonderful general guidelines, but then that's where you come in as the coach. If that individual doesn't have that base of knowledge on their own, to come in and help them make a smart decision. And if you are on your own, which I got a feeling there's a whole lot of people that I hope listen to this podcast that, you know, work out solo in their garage or wherever it happens to be. It's ideally through conversations like this that knowledge base will be given to them. They're like, gotcha. I can walk into my garage, my fire department, my whatever, and make a better decision as to what can I do to make this workout meet me where I'm at.
Yeah, so exactly. All. And especially for people in that circumstance, if they don't have a coach, you know, give yourself permission to run that experiment and don't be afraid to tinker with it. I mean, going back to your wall ball example, that's a great thing to point out that, okay, that 10 feet is too aggressive on your neck. The only way that you would know that there's a better alternative is by messing around with a little bit and then just paying attention and saying, okay, I did it a different way. I felt way better because of it. I can still get a great workout. This is clearly the better choice. But if you didn't permission yourself to kind of tinker, you wouldn't have ended up there. So that's really important too.
I despise wall balls. You know, when I think of an athlete like you, I'm always so jealous of your darn flexibility. Are there things, you know, we've discussed these things. I've mentioned some things that my broken self has to change. Do most general guidelines work for you? Or are there a couple things that pop to mind as, no, I got to make some changes here?
Yeah, generally speaking, yes. But I'll tell you the one big one that for years I have been just off limits with is anything behind the neck with a barbell.
Oh, and, interesting.
Yeah, you know, I've had plenty of shoulder dislocations. I can remember the first time I dislocated a shoulder, I was 12 years old, maybe even 11. And it's just been something that throughout my life has been an issue. And, you know, once it happens a couple times, it's just more likely to happen again in the future. Obviously, when I'm healthy and fit, it's really helpful for my shoulder health as well. But the one thing that almost without fail will aggravate it or straight up just cause me to, lose my position, so to speak, will be behind the headwork. So I just don't do it at all. I don't mess with it. With anything other than a PVC, I'll warm up with it. I'll practice position with it, but I'm never going to push the envelope there. And up to and including, you know, I did a drop-in not too long ago at an affiliate. Isabel was on the menu, so 30 snatches for time. Great workout, very classic. And they had a bunch of Bergener warm-up in there and a lot of, you know, snatch balance work, things of that nature. And that was a great opportunity for me to put the ego aside and say, hey, you know, this is a PVC pipe exercise for me, despite the fact that there's a bunch of people around me loading this up, challenging themselves in that way. That's not for me. I have to put that aside and focus on where the challenge is, which is, okay, once we get the bar in front of the body, that's where I can start to push it. So it's just a recognition of that over time.
Very cool. Yeah, that's I think that wraps up my thoughts. So I don't know if you have anything that stones you want to turn.
I do. One last thing that always I think should be part of these types of conversations, which is that, hey, you know, competition is great. I think it's it can be fun. There's a lot of healthy things that can come about with engaging with a competition. But a lot of the times competition is understandably written in a way that is shorthand, like we talked about, because there has to be a way that it can be implemented across the board. That does not mean that it is a superior way to train or even the best way to approach a movement. It just means that it is one easy way to implement it across a body of athletes so that everybody can be compared to one another. So I think it's easy sometimes for trainers to take a look at some of these more high profile events that happen within the community and say, oh, that's really cool. That's the way I should approach this in training. And oftentimes it's a great starting point, but it's not going to be the best way to take a look at it when you've got your normal mixed ability group class. So just keep that in mind as you move forward, that competition and training are two different things. And the way something shows up in competition doesn't necessarily mean it's the best approach in training. Always good to remember that.
Love it. Well, Nathaniel, hopefully we answered your question for you. Absolutely love the questions from the community. We say this all the time, that this is everybody else's show. This is not my show or Adrian's show. It's our pleasure and honor to try to answer whatever's on your mind. So please keep the questions coming. And you can do that by going to the BTWB YouTube channel, find this show down in the comments, post your thoughts on this show, on this topic, or something you'd like discussed in the future. Go to the Instagram channel, post a comment there when this gets posted, and we read all those different mediums and try to put everything together and sift through them for future shows. As we always say, if you want to help support the broadcast, go to the show notes, check out the VNR cycles, all kinds of cool stuff to help you get your first pull-up, handstand walk, push-up. There's some barbell stuff. There's some great on-ramp programs for dumbbell and bodyweight. So check them out. A lot of good content there. Once again, for Adrian Bosman, I'm Pat Sherwood, and we will see you next time.